on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday. Remember, the 5th of November, Anno Domini 2011, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Here we go. I'm going to start with the news.
I said before
before we do that, go ahead.
V for Vendetta has been on hundreds of times on dozens of channels in the last couple of weeks.
Has it?
Yeah.
I don't doubt it.
I'm in that movie. I'm the lead cop.
Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright. Yeah.
Exactly. before we get to the news, I just want to thank all of you. The fund drive, the pledge drive was a success, and we want to thank each and every one of you for doing your part. We know that you stepped up, and we're grateful and thankful for each and every one of you who made the pledge, dug deep into your hearts and into your pockets, and made the pledge. We got over the top. We did not beat the polka guys, but we came close this year. So thanks to each and every one of you. We could not do this without you. This station stays on the air for another 6 months thanks to your generosity, and we really, really appreciate it. So thanks to all those of you who are members of the Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites families. And now on to the news. Your phone company knows where you live, what websites you visit, what apps you download, what videos you watch, and even where you are. Now, some have begun selling that valuable information to the highest bidder. In mid-October, Verizon Wireless changed its privacy policy to allow the company to record customers' location data and web browsing history, combine it with other personal information like age and gender, aggregate it with millions of other customers' data, and sell it on an anonymous basis. Those kinds of data could be very useful and lucrative to third-party companies. For instance, if a small business owner wanted to figure out the best place to open a new pet store, the owner could buy a marketing report from Verizon about a designated area. The report might reveal which city blocks get the most foot or car traffic from people whose web browsing history reveals they own pets. Verizon is the first mobile provider to publicly confirm that it actually sells information gleaned from its customers directly to businesses. But it's hardly alone in using data about its subscribers to make extra cash. All four national carriers use aggregated customer information to help outside parties target ads to their subscribers. AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile insisted subscriber data are never actually handed over to third-party vendors. Nevertheless, they all make money on them. AT&T's AdWorks program, for instance, promotes AT&T's customer base to advertisers. On its AdWorks website, AT&T touts its ability to reach customized audience segments based on anonymous and aggregate demographics. It then shows customers carefully tailored coupons, in-app ads, and web ads. Sprint, like Verizon, tracks the kinds of websites a customer visits on their mobile devices, as well as what applications they use, according to spokesman Jason Gertzen. Sprint uses those data to help third parties target ads to customers. The web pages we go to and searches we do are the closest thing to our thoughts, the most private info of all that can be recorded, said Brian Kenish, head of Disconnect, an online privacy tool. If Verizon succeeds, I'm sure others will follow. Despite all the talk about privacy lately, things are just getting worse. And, of course, we have our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And the poll is, your cell phone company is selling your personal data. And the choices are, I knew it, no way, seriously, and, oh, yeah, that's a surprise. Now, when you're done taking the poll, I know you're going to have a lot more to say about this. So if you look at the yellow box underneath the poll and click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to another great website where you can add your opinion. And the question there, of course, is how do you feel about your cell phone company selling your personal data? And, of course, that's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, this is something the cable, wire-based, both DSL and cable internet providers have been doing for a while now. Your internet provider knows every website you go to because your requests go through them.
Yep. And so there's no way that, any of the people who do this are going to leave money laying on the table. So they're going to do it. They're going to sell those data, and they're going to make some money off of them. The only thing we really can hope, of course, is that, in fact, it's really anonymized, so they don't know my name.
It's been possible for quite a while now. For you'll be walking down the street, you'll pass in front of a store, and an ad for that store pops up on your phone. Because your phone knows where it is.
Yep.
We have programs that do that on the other side, something like Yelp. I'm walking in front of a store, and it says, if you ask Yelp, it tells you there's coupons for that store.
Right.
We don't mind that as much, because we asked for it.
Right.
But when you walk by a store and, poof, there's an ad, that's annoying.
That's annoying. But it is what it is.
The new TV show, that's annoying.
Is there one? I don't doubt it.
That could be 24-hour-a-day program.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller of the week is Vic from Irondequoit. Welcome, Vic. What's your question?
November 1st was the last time I could get on Firefox. The three things I did that day were I upgraded iTunes, and I put a flash drive in and tried to update my Firefox portable, which was still 3-point-something or other, and it kept going for about a half hour. Finally, I just backed out of it. And I tried one of the free scans from Kaspersky, a virus scan. And ever since then, I can't get on Firefox. When I do click on the icon, the browser shows up for about 2 seconds, and then I get the Mozilla Crash Reporter, and that's where I am, dead in the water.
All right. First, when you tried to upgrade, did you uninstall version 3?
No, I didn't. I just went over. I just clicked on, help, check for upgrades, and I clicked on update or upgrade it.
Now, usually that works, but usually that works, but sometimes it doesn't. Do other browsers work? Have you tried IE, or do you have Chrome or Safari installed as well?
Yeah, I tried IE, no problem. This morning I went to Chrome, and it's pretty nice. It's almost like Firefox.
Yeah, it sounds like something was corrupted in the Firefox download or maybe the Firefox install. I would suggest going to Firefox's website, getfirefox.com, and download the standalone installer, and then uninstall what you already have and reinstall it fresh from that standalone.
GetFirefox.com.
Yeah.
And then uninstall.
Uninstall the version that you have that isn't working.
If you can.
If you can, yeah, the uninstaller may not work either.
Now, will I lose my bookmarks and everything that I have?
No, those are all held separately in your profile folder. It's not part of the program.
Okay, so GetFirefox.com, uninstall that, and then download from that site.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've also got a couple of websites for you. You can try using a new profile.
Firefox safe mode.
Right. You can start Firefox in safe mode, and I think that's you do it from the command line. You go to the start button and you select run.
Sometimes they actually put a program item in the Firefox folder in your start menu in Firefox.
Right.
There may be a Firefox safe mode command as well.
It was before, but every time I click on that, and it tries to load Firefox. I don't have those options anymore. I used to have the safe mode.
Hold down the option. Wait, is this Mac or? Nah, it's got to be Mac. Hold down the option key while you start Firefox. So on the PC, that would be the Alt key, right?
Yeah.
So you hold down a key while you start Firefox, and it will go into safe mode, which disables any extensions and anything else. And that may allow you to get Firefox back up again. But it does sound like you're going to need to reinstall Firefox.
Okay, well, I'm going to go to that site right now and see what happens.
Well, the first thing you should do is hit your start button.
Yeah.
In the run box,
right.
Type Firefox... a space, and dash safe mode. And safe mode is spelled SAFE-MODE. So it's Firefox space dash safe dash mode with no spaces.
Okay. Firefox space. Okay. Yeah, safe mode is there's no space or is there a space?
No spaces. Dash safe dash mode with no spaces. So it's the dash. S-A-F-E, the dash, M-O-D-E.
Okay, got it.
Try that. If that lets you do it,
mm-hmm.
yeah, then try quitting and just coming back out again. I mean, that's...
I got the Firefox safe mode now, so it's disable all add-ons.
Disable all your add-ons, reset all... Well, if you see, you can set the user preferences without losing your... and reset all user preferences to Firefox defaults.
Okay, the App Plus is disable all add-ons?
And both.
Okay.
And then say continue in safe mode.
Okay.
Then exit, and then start it up again and see what happens.
Okay, I exited. Let's see.
Wait a minute, hold on.
Mr. Beast. I'm posting that link now too.
Yeah, don't
it's
do that
shift
yet. Did
key.
You do that already?
Yep.
All right, exit out of it.
I did.
And start Firefox in safe mode again.
Okay, start, run, already got that in there, okay.
Right. Select disable all add-ons, select reset all user preferences to Firefox defaults, then select exit. That was my mistake. If you continue in safe mode, it doesn't set all those things, which is counterintuitive to me, but
yeah.
That's all right. So once you exit, then try starting it up in regular mode.
Okay, so reset all preferences, user defaults, disable all add-ons, then continue in safe mode.
No, don't select continue in safe mode.
Exit out?
Yeah, disable all add-ons, reset all user preferences to Firefox defaults,
Got
then
it.
Exit.
I did.
Now you should, theoretically, be able to start it up in regular mode. If you can't, it's the actual program that's corrupted, and then you have to do the uninstall, reinstall.
Okay, I'm going to have to do it because it came up again, and then the crash reporter came on.
Yeah, so it's the program itself, so make sure you've downloaded a new copy.
Yeah, I'm going to write to that site that Steve said, getfirefox.com, and
right.
then I'll uninstall what I have.
Perfect.
And then beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you very much. I'll try it now.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
And it's the shift key on Windows. Hold the shift key while you start Firefox, and it enters in this safe mode window. The option key on a Mac.
Oh, very nice. But
let's see what
but
it is under Linux.
It's also just as easy.
Under Linux, you type the command.
Yeah, of course you do. Well, duh. It's Linux. We live in the command line.
Yep.
I can't tell you the last time I didn't have a command line up. All right, our next caller, Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
I got a question for you. I want to buy a 10-inch tablet, but I can't afford an iPad. Is there any tablet that will accept my iTunes video and music without buying an iPad?
Well, that's a lovely question.
Any tablet should play unprotected video. It depends if you have protected video that you've purchased from the iTunes store.
All the video I've got has been purchased through Apple. Everything I've got has been purchased through them.
So you'll have to strip the DRM probably to play on a different device.
And I'm sure we don't know how to do that.
Yeah, I don't know offhand.
You should
because,
be able to...
I mean, you see all these programs, oh, for $200 you can get this. And I say to myself, yeah, that's great, but everything is in iTunes. And I can't afford $700.
Right. Well, and that's how Apple locks you in.
Well, the iPad starts at $500, so that's...
Even so.
I can't afford $500 either.
Virtually all of the other tablets are Android-based, so you would use the, VLC player to play video on the Android tablets. And I think, VLC on the Mac can play most of those videos.
The problem. The problem is the digital rights.
Is the DRM.
Digital restriction management, as I'm sure my friends in the IRC chat are saying. But here's the deal. You should be able to export music to MP3 format or
well, the music is all unprotected now,
right?
But the
so
video
that shouldn't be a
still
problem.
Is protected on iTunes.
You would save it all out as MP3s and then move it over to the tablet. That's not a problem.
There should be ways. Any other tablet maker's got to know that iTunes is there, and people may have stuff in their iTunes library. They should have something built in to read that.
Sure, they should, but
they
I bet
should.
They don't.
Yeah.
I'm
you
sorry,
said
but
you said the
don't.
Key word
yeah,
though.
They should.
They
yeah,
should do
I've
a
got,
lot
I mean,
of things.
I've got a. I must have over 300 videos that I've purchased over 10, 15 years. You know, it plays on my iTouch, but my eyesight the way it is, I need a bigger tablet to look at on now. But I just can't afford an iPad, and that's my problem. I don't want to buy something and find out it's not going to work.
Yeah, that most of the video you get from iTunes is MPEG-4 encoded with AAC audio. So it's generic video. The problem is the DRM wrapper. I'm trying to open one now in VLC on my Mac. It probably will work because it can read the Fairplay stuff through iTunes. You may have to open it in a media converter and save it in a different format.
You're talking Greek right now to me. Like, okay.
Well, do you have a different brand tablet in mind? Because that company may have specific instructions for their tablet.
Oh, there is HSN has got what they call a netbook.
Well, a netbook is just a very, very low end PC laptop. And usually can't play video that well anyway.
Okay. Well, what would you recommend? Let me ask you that.
Well, listen, we got to take a break, Linda. Stay on the line.
Okay.
Stay on the line. We'll be right back. You were going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The weekend isn't over on Sunday nights.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Linda from Greece on the line. You still there? Linda?
Yes.
Okay. There's a product called Double Twist.
Okay.
For Android and for iOS.
Okay.
And for
Mac.
Mac
too,
and PC.
Like, yeah.
So you would download the Double Twist program to your PC. You have PC, right?
Yes, I do.
Well, you can play it in iTunes. So you can play your video in iTunes already. So if you this Double Twist program is for Android. So if you get an Android tablet, this allows you to sync your Android tablet with your iTunes on your computer and get all your music and movies right from iTunes on your computer into Android.
Okay.
So that would be using an Android tablet. If you get a Windows netbook, then you would just use iTunes.
Okay. So I download Double Twist to my PC?
No.
And to your Android tablet. You need it in both places.
Okay.
Then you connect them. On the PC, Double Twist will load up all of your iTunes stuff.
Okay.
On the Android tablet, you follow the instructions to connect it to your Double Twist on your PC the same way that you connect your iPad or iPod to iTunes, right?
I'm a little lost, but okay, go keep going.
All right, let me make this simpler. You install Double Twist on the PC.
And the Android tablet.
No, hold on. Just listen to me.
Mac and Android, no Windows, according to what I'm seeing here. Maybe because I'm on a Mac. Are you seeing a Windows version there?
No, hold on. Where is it?
DoubleTwist.com.
Well, that's way too easy.
Yeah.
There's
a desktop version for Mac, and there's a mobile version for Android.
Yes, but it said in the original thing that I saw that it also worked on the PC. So here's the deal.
Basically, it's iTunes for your Android tablet. So it works just like iTunes does to play your music and video, but on an Android tablet.
Okay. So yeah. I download Double Twist to my PC, correct?
Right.
To your tablet when you buy an Android tablet.
There is a version. Listen.
Okay, yeah, here I see.
We can talk at odds all the time, but here's what it says on their website. You download Double Twist to your PC and install it.
Okay.
Think of that as iTunes for Android.
Okay.
Then you also download Double Twist onto your Android device. When you hook your Android device into your PC, the two Double Twists talk to each other.
Gotcha.
And the one on the PC will load all your iTunes stuff into your Android tablet.
Okay.
Now, you need to be aware, it will, as near as I can tell, download music, photos, and videos.
Yeah.
Right? The problem is going to be that the tablet you buy for $200 is really not going to work as well as the iPad you would buy for $600.
Okay.
It's just going to be slower and a little less convenient.
Well, what would you recommend besides the iPad? What would you recommend?
Well, but this is my point. Anything you buy at a lower price is going to be lower specs, okay. Right? If you buy a $600 or $700 or $800 iPad, it's really equivalent, and I know Steve hates to hear this, to a $600 or $700 or $800 Android tablet.
Okay.
But none of those have an equivalent at a $200 level.
Okay.
You see, it's just going to be slower. It's going to be a little less. You can take a look at the Dell Streak. There's a bunch of them that are coming out for Christmas.
The Kindle Fire is $200.
The Kindle Fire is an Android tablet. The
tablets are going to be the hottest thing I think for this Christmas season.
We're going to see a lot of them.
We're going to see a lot of people complaining when they buy the $200 tablet and the video is slow and jerky.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. It's going to be very annoying. So save your money and get the iPad.
Well, the iPad or an Android tablet at that price. But in either case, the reality is that at $200, you don't get the quality you get at
$600. Okay.
And you can, for people that are technically inclined, you can recompress your video to a smaller size so that it plays okay on the smaller screens with lower devices.
Yeah.
But that adds an extra step that average people aren't going to want to do.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm going to have to save my money for the iPad.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Good luck.
Bye.
I'm excited to see the Kindle Fire.
As a
book reader and as a web surfer, it's probably going to be fine. But we get this question all the time. I just want to surf the web. And it turns out you want to surf the web and go and play Facebook games.
Yep.
And you want to watch videos. And that kind of thing just doesn't work well on these low-end tablets.
A
friend of mine bought a $150 Penn Digital tablet as a book reader and then tried to watch a video on it. And it was garbage.
It would be garbage.
And it's not that good a book reader either.
Well, I have a Nook Color, and I love it for everything it does. The video on it is smooth and fast. And I've got a version of Honeycomb for it, which I haven't played with in a while. Maybe I'll go home and play with that this afternoon and see what it looks like. But I haven't played with it in a while. But, you know, $250, and they're going to lower the price on it from what I hear. But even $250 for a 7-inch Android tablet, it is a little slower under Honeycomb because it was never compiled for it. It was a hack, so it's a little slower, but it works great. So I'll have to play with video when I get home. Audio works great, I know that. I'll have to play with video when I get home. All right, our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. My dad just purchased a laptop. He's been using a desktop for years. And I hooked it up for him on a wireless home network with security. And the question he has is there an easy way, I guess the word would be easy there, that he can run Quicken on both computers?
No. That's simple enough.
Yeah.
Well, you buy Quicken for both computers.
Yeah.
Right. The problem is going to be the Quicken files that you create.
Yes.
You can, I guess, create a share that lets you put them on both machines.
Or your remote desktop on one to the other.
Yeah, I'd get since he's got a wireless network, I would almost get like a Buffalo drive to hang it off the network so that you're only working with one file. Because that's the danger. I mean, where are you doing the updating? You know, if you put transactions in one and you don't update it to the other, then you're going to be out of sync.
Yeah, so you can you can call one computer, your Quicken server, and share that folder to your network, and on the other computer, open the file through the network. And it can be done. It's just not easy.
Well, and I'm sure that the folks at Quicken don't warranty that. So if you have a problem, they're not going to help you.
Quicken may not even work through the network. QuickBooks is designed to work through a network, but Quicken may not.
Quicken does. Right. Yeah, I use Quicken. The file is saved up on my server.
Yeah, good.
So I save the file up there because there's really where it's backed up.
Right, it really doesn't know it's a server. It's just another drive on the network.
Yeah, you just point it to wherever the folder is, and that's all it cares about.
The other thing you can do is use a program like VNC or a remote desktop, RDP, so that on one computer you're actually seeing the screen of the other computer and controlling it as if you were sitting in front of the other computer.
Log Me In is free.
Log Me In is free. That works through the internet, which is handy. If you're doing it on your own internal network,
I'm thinking. If he's away, you know, with his laptop and he needs to get into his QuickBooks or Quicken,
yeah,
from, you know, to home, he can just, you know, he's sitting, say, at the library or some coffee shop, needs to get a balance on his or check something in Quicken, he can easily, through Log Me In, get in there, see he's working with his desktop.
Right.
So you're not playing with two copies. It saves you some money there. But like you say, VNC definitely for home use, local.
Well, and whatever else you're going to do,
yeah,
make sure you're backing that file up regularly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It only takes you to get
And then make sure you don't open the backup file. We see that so often that Quicken has an automatic backup feature in it, which is handy. If people remember to use it, but then they end up opening a backup file. So you've got your finances file, and then it'll make a backup of finances, and then we see people have opened that, and it backs that up, and it's backup of finances. And I've run into people that have backup of finances. So they keep opening their backup file.
Eventually, their hard drives are full, and they don't know why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And where's my file? Well, you opened your backup file, and they
or get like
confused.
I said a couple weeks ago, that one person. I'll be pleasant. That was doing backups, and what they had done is taken the terabyte hard drive, broke it
right,
in half.
Right, it was a C and D drive.
C and a D drive. She goes, it was going to the D. Yeah, but you know what? That hard drive
crashed.
But
at any rate, back to your actual problem, Bill. We suggest that whichever way you go, you make sure you're backing up that file. And if you do Log Me In, for example, then no matter what machine he's on, he's actually working on his desktop.
Right? Okay, thank you very much.
Because you're actually in that. So that might be easiest because everything's in the same place. Everything's going to work exactly right. You know you're using the same file.
Another thing that might be easier is to put that file on a flash drive, and then you carry that flash drive with you, and whatever computer you're on, you open it from the flash drive. That way you're opening a single file.
That's also another possibility, but then you can lose that file. Or
right. So you still need to have a backup of it.
Flash drive can be corrupted, so you still need a backup. But there's three different ways to go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Yep. It's always that easy part of the question.
Yeah, the easy part is the hard part.
Yeah.
But it really, when you're working with something like Log Me In, it's fairly simple. You follow the instructions on the website.
I mean,
install the pieces.
That's
on both
the best
machines,
it gets. I mean, he sounded a little disappointed.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, sorry, but sometimes you got to do a little work.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, computers have literally turned everybody's life around, and I hear it daily. I don't know what I'd do without this thing. You know, I'm so lost without it.
I know that Intuit has a QuickBooks web access. As a service in your QuickBooks program, it publishes your QuickBooks to the web page, so then you can go to a web page and see your QuickBooks. It may also do that for Quicken, although I kind of doubt it. It's more of a business feature. But you could use mint.com online, which basically does all your finances through a web page or through an app on a mobile device. That way you don't have to worry about where the file is. But you have to worry that now that your financial data is online.
Right.
Although, ironically, I read this when Mint first came. Mint is a pretty interesting program. You give it all your bank account and credit card information, and it pulls all the data and coalesces it all into a single screen, basically, for you. And people were worried about giving Mint their credit card numbers. When they find out, it works just as your banks already do for sharing your financial data back and forth. When you deposit check at one bank, it has to share your financial data with another bank to see if the check will cover or not. So it's Mint's kind of a neat program, and they just released a iPad native version of it too, so you can do your finances on the go.
Right.
And you get those annoying emails about, you know, you've got this transaction pending. Oh crap.
Right.
Oops.
All right, our next caller is our friend Al from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Al. How are you?
Hey guys, I'm good. How are you doing?
Peachy.
Good.
OFS.
Hey, I got two questions on slightly different topics. And I bow to your wisdom on the both of these.
Okay. Oh, boy. Are we in trouble?
Yeah.
So, here's the easy one. Years ago, we were all told to be wary of multiple downloads from Windows when doing updates, that everything that they offer is not everything you want to accept.
Right.
My question revolves around the malicious software tool that Microsoft keeps trying to cram down my throat. Should I still treat that with care, or is that okay and doesn't mess up the rest of the things going on in my system?
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's actually gotten much, much better. The big thing is, what else are you running? If you're already running an antivirus program you're happy with, you don't need it.
Exactly.
And certainly you don't want to be running it simultaneously with those other programs.
Okay.
So really it's just a matter of pick one and be happy with it.
Usually the MSRT just runs that once when you download the new version every month. It kind of got a bad rap now and then because some viruses and malware hack themselves into your system so deep that when MSRT removes it, the computer quits working.
Well, the thing that is, too, though, is Microsoft is not very due diligent in updating it all the time.
MSRT is kind of like the one that only scans for specific viruses. The one we don't recommend anymore.
Yeah. I don't remember.
That we can't remember the name of anymore. So it's only for a couple of dozen specific malicious programs that infect Windows in very specific ways. So it's not a general purpose one. Their Security Essentials is their general purpose anti-malware program. But the MSRT, Malicious Software Removal Tool, that comes with every monthly update, generally is a good idea to run because it scans for things outside of the normal anti-malware programs.
Okay. Well, good. Then I'll continue to dodge and avoid it at all costs.
There you go. And what's your second question?
Okay, second one. One of your favorites is Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
Been using it for a while on one machine, decided to put it on my other newer, better machine. Every time I go to download it, the download file for installation never appears in my hard drive, in the directory where I put it. Tried logging in as low-level user and also as a supervisor. Same effect.
Huh. All right, listen, hang on.
Yep.
Apparently with funeral
the choir,
music,
yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It's usually a more upbeat song. It's Booker T and the MGs.
I like Booker T and the MGs, except for whatever this is. All right, we're going to stay on the line, Al.
Later
we're
going to
be back in just a couple of minutes.
We'll
Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. Al's on the line. We've got you right here. It's a dang party right here on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on the station supported by its members, Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Al on the line wondering where his Firefox download went. Where are you downloading it from?
Straight from the website, their website.
Okay, getfirefox.com?
Yeah.
And I know you, so you know where it is you're putting it, and it just doesn't appear. What it sounds like is it's not a complete download, because Windows will often just delete an incomplete download, but you usually get some sort of message.
Well, it puts it in the temp file until it finishes the download, and then it moves it to your folder you told it to go to.
Right.
So you may want to look in your temporary internet files or something like that and see if it's still in there and just never got moved into the folder you told it to.
Okay.
Or it might not have, or it might be, there might be, if you find a Firefox thing, try deleting it from the temporary internet folder or emptying the cache in Firefox and trying it again. Or alternately, download something else like Chrome and see if that comes down. I mean,
oh,
just for a test.
You just want to get me into another browser, I can tell.
I do. That's exactly the reason right there. But
Chrome's a good one.
In the meantime, we just want to confuse you more, Al. That's our job here.
Simplify my life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, but the point
with
here
more programs.
That I'm really trying to make is if other downloads also disappear.
I'll have to try that. That's a good one. I hadn't thought about that.
Right. It may not be a Firefox issue. It may be a system issue.
Sure. Hey, I will try that, and I'll let you know how it works out. By the way, just one quick comment. I noticed in wandering through the Firefox options that it was set up to save up to a gigabyte of temporary files,
mm-hmm.
which I knocked down to about 40 meg, because that's what I used to do with Windows Explorer.
Sure.
I would almost want to warn people about that because, that kind of had 16,000 temporary files, stacked up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of abusive.
Yep. I completely agree, except that nowadays you kind of almost need that much.
Sometimes.
Mainly because you have such big graphics and stuff on the net. But if you've got the disk space, all it does is it just takes a little longer to search through. It depends on the speed of your machine.
Well, the machine's fast enough. I'm just getting up to about 400,000 files on a disk, and it's starting to hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you're one of those guys who cares about those things.
I do. Hey, guys, thank you so much for your advice. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Al. Take it easy, sir. Have a good holiday if we don't talk to you between now and then.
And you also. Thank you.
One other thing I should remind you guys, too, that we haven't mentioned. Well, actually, two things. One, I'd like to definitely have the folks stay tuned the second hour, because I even did a little show prep on this one for today's Uncle Dave's Story Hour. So I got a little stuff going there. But the other thing, more important, so you folks aren't late for church or any other meetings tomorrow or anything else that you have to do, it is daylight savings time. And remember, we fall back. It's always spring forward, fall back. That's the way I was taught in school.
Yep.
And so don't forget tonight to go back and set your clocks back 1 hour. Your computers, for the most part, nowadays will do that automatically. There used to be tools that you had to put in there and that, but it'll automatically do that for you as long as it's set up for daylight savings time. But definitely don't forget to set your clocks back or you're going to be late. Or no, in this case, you'd be early.
That's right.
Would you?
No. Instead of 6 o'clock, it's 5 o'clock.
So, yeah, you're going to get up early.
No, you'd be late. Because it's going to be 5 o'clock. You think it's 6 o'clock. No. Yeah, you would be early. Wait. This is why I don't do daylight savings time. I hate daylight savings.
Oh, I know. It's a way.
I'm going to move to Arizona where they don't have daylight savings time.
And why do some states do and some states don't?
Well, all states do it except for Hawaii and Arizona. Because they're intelligent states.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. Back in the 16 and 17 and 1800s, even the early 1900s,
it made sense for the harvest.
Exactly.
Well, then
right.
They said during the war it made sense because you wouldn't turn your lights on.
Yeah, except you save less than 1/10 of 1%.
Yeah, no.
If we go to bed when it gets dark and you get up when it's light, then we don't need to burn electricity at all.
That's exactly right. But more importantly, it's really a holdover from the days when America ran, when it was farming that ran America.
Remember the 1 year we didn't? We didn't set the clocks?
We've always set the clocks, but we just did
One year we skipped.
I don't remember.
During the winter to save energy.
I don't remember that.
I remember 1 year.
I'm sure it happened, but I don't remember it.
Well, but being an older fart like me, I remember those things.
And you make up things in your head.
Thank you. It's a great party in there.
Yeah. You have a whole landscape going on in your mind that none of us have ever seen. But
don't want to either.
Right. But the reality is that you don't have a need for it so much anymore. It's a relic. It's a holdover, and I'm not entirely
sort of like some of our government people.
Japan is thinking of stopping daylight savings time.
It would just make life a lot easier all the way around.
A lot of places in Europe, they call it summertime and wintertime. We're the only one that tries to call it daylight saving time.
Right. Well, that's how they sold it.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it's all about how you
still haven't sold me on it yet.
Well, we have grown up in an era where it is no longer essential.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree. If I were having to get up at 5 o'clock every morning to feed the chickens, I would want it to be lighter in the winter than darker, and so you set the clocks back every fall.
And that was the point. You didn't get up at 5 o'clock. You got up at dawn. Whatever time that happened to be, you got up at dawn.
Right. That's true.
I tell my son that.
You get up at dawn.
Yeah. You get up at dawn and do your chores, and then you have breakfast.
When I was a kid,
then you do your chores and go to school.
I woke up the chicken.
Yep.
That was my job. I woke up the rooster.
And they were throwing the eggs at you.
Exactly. But yeah, you get up, you do the chores, then you eat breakfast.
Then you go to school. Then you do your chores, then you go to school.
We did it in the summer. So
you come home from school and do your chores.
Yep.
And then you eat dinner and do your chores, and then you go to bed because it's dark.
Exactly how it works.
Yep.
And one of your chores was homework.
And you got 2 months off in the summer to do the harvest.
Exactly. But we don't need it anymore from my point of view.
Mm-mm.
And I can't tell you how many times I've had to download time zone data on my Linux box this last month. I don't know what they think they're doing, but they keep making me download it. I'm not sure why. But yeah, that's that. All right, let's read a nice news item here. Forget your current cable provider. Google could be your next cable company. Google is considering its own paid cable TV service, potentially shaking up a territory long dominated by major industry players Comcast and AT&T. A source familiar with the matter said that the potential project is still in its early days and that Google hasn't quite decided what to do as of yet. This is all still speculative territory right now, the source said. The service could include offerings from content providers such as Time Warner, Walt Disney Company, and Discovery Communications, according to the Wall Street Journal. Eventually, it could also include phone and video offerings bundled together, akin to Comcast Triple Play, TNT's UVerse package, etc., which offer a combination of TV, internet, and phone service. The proposed service could be instituted as part of a wider Google initiative to install high-speed internet networks in different locations across the country. Google first announced this effort in February of 2010, you may remember, and earlier this year, it broke ground on a high-speed network dubbed Google Fiber, in Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas. The company also rolled out its fiber program in Stanford University's residential subdivisions last month and completely ignored Rochester. Just saying. Google's fiber optic network boasts speeds of up to 1 gigabit per second, more than 100 times faster than typical broadband services that are available. Some Google executives have also floated the idea of in America. In other countries, they already have gigabit. We're just behind. Some Google executives have also floated the idea of offering premium TV channels on the company's YouTube sites. That's according to the Wall Street Journal, which is a true maneuver toward completely cutting the cord on traditional cable boxes altogether. However, a source familiar with the matter said that Google has absolutely no plans to offer a premium TV channel service through YouTube. Instead, Google plans to place its efforts into the recently announced 100 new YouTube video channels the company is currently working to develop. The channels will be created in partnership with multiple other media companies and are planned to launch next year. So, is Google your next cable company? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I'll tell you what, I really pushed to get Google to come to Rochester with their fiber test, but that did not work out for us. It's too bad.
Yeah, it is. I mean, especially with the U of R and, you know, all that.
I wonder if they thought we're already such a high-tech company, someone should have already done it here.
That's certainly a possibility. I don't know. But it would be an interesting. It changes the landscape significantly. I'm a little surprised at that, to be honest with you. I personally would have thought that Google would start up a cell phone company first, since that would be an interesting adjunct to their Android market. But you know, again, maybe we've got the problem of competition. You know, not just the FCC breathing down their necks, but whatever agreements they've signed with all the
cell
phone
providers. Files got kicked out of here. Files never got in here.
So, yeah, that's right. Files never got to Rochester. But more importantly to me is whatever deals they may have made with cell phone companies who bought Android.
Mm.
You know, a non-compete clause with them. So that may be farther along on the horizon. Of course, I guess non-compete clauses only mean what they mean because Apple once signed one never to get into the music business. So. That's neither here nor there, but that's the latest thing. It does change the landscape significantly if Google works at becoming a major player in cable network providing. And I'd be interested in hearing what your thoughts are on that. It's an interestingly different thing.
Yeah. Wow. They have three companies to pick from.
See, that's the annoyance, is there are many internet companies to choose from in any given city, mm-hmm. but there's so much overlap. You basically only have two decent choices, DSL and cable. And then you have people that resell those same DSL and cable services.
Which you don't get.
Right. So is Google talking about reselling somebody's existing service, or are they going to run new wires? And that's the whole point of a faster service, is they have to run new wires.
Brand new fiber optics.
And you can,
unless they can piggyback off of somebody else's fiber optics. I don't know. You know, grabbing a few other strands in that fiber optic
Yeah, but somebody, you know, somebody owns the fiber cable, and they got to rent space from them.
Yeah.
Well, that was always the big thing with Earthlink, because you can get Earthlink cable, and they basically resell Time Warner, or you get Earthlink DSL, and they resell Frontier. How can they be any difference in price if, you know, they're buying it in bulk and selling it at a lower margin than the other companies? Because somebody, you know, has to own the wire, and it's frustrating. You can go to satellite internet, but that's usually a lot slower and a lot more expensive. Or cellular internet is ridiculously expensive.
Yep.
For any appreciable amount.
And of course the government is changing the landscape as well. Since, as we reported last week, they're taking the money that's traditionally gone to phone companies, come from phone companies, and gone back to phone companies to provide rural broadband. And now they're saying that a rural phone service, and now they're saying that money will go to provide rural broadband. So the theory is that the companies that build out broadband to rural areas will get a break, and therefore the theory is that the people out in rural areas will be able to buy at a value, at a price point that's essentially the same as what people in the city get it at, and as opposed to having to pay a lot more because there's a long haul involved.
There's a couple of internet companies out west that have started a really, really cheap internet service, and they're basically using the school lunch program as their guideline, that if your kids qualify for free school lunches, then your family would qualify for this $5 a month broadband internet or whatever it is.
Oh, that's kind of clever.
But the restrictions are so heavy on the services that most of the reports I'm reading about it are that no one actually does qualify for it, and when you do get the service, it's so slow anyway that you wouldn't like it. So it's, yeah, they're offering this low cost internet for low income families, but you know they're putting so much restrictions on it that it just doesn't do anything for you.
Right. I don't know. It's I have never used. I have never seen, you know, the speeds of that. I know that there are countries in the world that have much, much higher speeds than we do, just as a matter of course. You know, to them, 10 megabits per second would be ridiculously slow. But here in America, we built ours first, and therefore it's the oldest, and therefore it would cost a lot of money to replace it. But, you know, in areas where we have what we think of as high speed, great, but there are huge swaths of this nation that don't have any broadband. And in the 21st century, it is increasingly necessary that people, particularly kids, have access to the information that's out there. Yes, they can watch more Justin Bieber videos. And yes, there's the possibility of pornography. But there's also an amazing amount of real information out there. And kids are sponges, and the more they learn to open up their minds, the more they learn to absorb, the more they will get into the habit of doing that on a lifelong basis. I firmly believe that. And we can help them do that by maintaining a high-speed connection for them. All right, we are going to take another break. We will be back in a few more minutes. You have managed to waste an entire hour of your life with us, but you're going to get that chance to do it again in case you did it badly the first time. We're going to be taking a break, but we've got a whole nother hour of this show. We're only halfway through it, so we'll all struggle through together for the next hour. Of course, you know you can give us a call. The numbers are 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. It's toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Call us with a question. Call us with a comment. Call us with a suggestion. Keep it clean. You'll be on the air. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're leaping into the second hour of Soundbites.
See if that's any better on my mic level. I didn't realize I was that hot. Somebody text us, which you can do. If you have a particular question and you don't want to call in, you can text us at 585-209-9010. You know, if you're sitting in the car out there doing some errands and want to get your question in, go ahead and do it that way, too. I've got it up, and we can take them that way also.
Perfect. Yes, there is a battery problem with the new iPhone 4S, says Apple, and yes, we're on the case. A small number of customers have reported lower than expected battery life on iOS 5 devices, Apple's spokesrobot Natalie Harrison said in a statement. We have found a few bugs that are affecting battery life, and we will release a software update to address those in a few weeks. Apple didn't say what the bugs were or go into any other specifics. The problem may not be exclusive to the new iPhone. Instead, it may be in the operating system, iOS 5, which the phone shares with other Apple devices, namely the iPad. People who crowded around to buy the phone since last month's release have been reporting that the battery runs down remarkably quickly, sometimes in mid-conversation. You can be talking to someone and... One thread on Apple's own Apple Support Community site ran to 217 pages as of Thursday morning. iPhone 4 upgraded to iOS 5. Battery life was fine for a week. After that, started to go from 100% to 20% in 8 hours. Didn't add anything new. Can't figure out what happened, wrote one user. I'm hoping that iOS 5.0.1 will fix it. Other technically minded people have weighed in with their own solutions. Perhaps there's a bug in location services, which tells the phone where it is so that it can give you directions or steer you to local sellers of things you want. Or they think you want. If the phone can't get signals from local cell towers, it sends out signals of its own using battery power to see if it can get a response. In the meantime, various bloggers suggest going deep into the menus of iOS 5 and turning off location services apps you don't need. Does that solve the problem? Have you got the problem? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I also remember reading a tip in one of the blogs about turning off your time zone feature. If you don't travel enough to cross time zones, mm-hmm. turn off time zone support. Then the phone OS isn't always trying to see where you are to set your current time zone.
That's a good point.
Well, and there's also the fact that in some cities, there are lots of places you don't get a good signal. And if iOS 5 is more aggressive than iOS 4 was mm-hmm. in searching out that new signal, that also would explain it. It would also explain why in places like Rochester,
It'll crank up the power to find that signal.
That additional signal.
Right, which is a good thing in one sense, but a bad thing when it's a battery problem.
Well, that's one other thing, though, I've noticed even with my phone. You know, I've got the 2 gigabyte limit, you know, thing, but I don't use much of it because I can find so many free hotspots. It's unbelievable.
Right. Well, interestingly, my phone, of course, is still just the original Droid, but I forgot to plug my phone in last night, and when I woke up, it was still at 80%, so... You know, it didn't have any trouble at all doing whatever it did overnight, and it downloaded a bunch of updates and all kinds of other things, but it did not seem to have much of a problem. Of course, Verizon coverage in Western New York is just huge, so I can understand why it would not necessarily have had a problem. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joanne from lovely Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's your question?
Just is there any date when iPad 3 will be coming out?
Yes, I'm sure there is.
I didn't know, though.
Nobody knows.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
It's a secret.
Yeah. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Joanne, the reality is that iPad 3 is not going to appear until sales of iPad 2 start to slump. And it ain't doing that anytime soon.
Generally speaking, it's about once a year every Apple product gets updated.
Think of it is, though, you would think, and I know that's a dangerous word, think, because of the pending, and I think it's going to be really big this Christmas, the Android tablets coming out, that the Mac folks would want something else to push folks to the next level.
Well, I think,
and have that out for the Christmas season because, the Droid tablets are very appealing. They're cheaper. The apps that you can get for the Android are just as good, if not even some better.
Most are the same.
Than the iPad. And save a few hundred bucks. Instead of, like Linda was saying from Greece, instead of spending $500, you can spend $300 to $400. Uh-huh. That's an extra $100 you can spend on something else.
Right.
And that is a pretty good pad.
Yeah.
So far it's been pretty good. But you know what? The iPad 2, what don't you like about the iPad 2?
I just don't have one yet.
But my point is,
about a week after you buy it.
Yeah.
Actually, it'll be about 3 weeks after you buy it because Apple has a 2-week return policy.
Right. Actually, it would be 3 weeks after I buy one, but I'm not buying one, so they may not come out with a 3 for a while. But my point really is, what are you expecting out of the iPad 3 that you couldn't get in the iPad 2?
And nobody knows what the new features are going to be.
Yeah, I just think it would be clearer, and I don't want to show that many movies, but...
The biggest rumors are a higher resolution screen, so that the movies on it will look better. It will probably have a faster processor. It will probably have more memory, but that's what you get in any Apple product.
Try this thing called TV.
Yeah.
Those are usually bigger screens.
Well, it's hard to do when you're in the car or in a bus.
Wait until you get home. Hello, 1080p on a, you can get a 30-inch TV, sit back, relax in a chair, and then really see it and enjoy it.
Yeah. 52-inch TV and sit by the pool and watch it in the living room.
One of the analysts that I read had some interesting opinions. A lot of us expected an iPad 3 before Christmas, but the iPad 2 just came out this spring, so two models in 1 year probably won't happen. But
never say never.
One of the things that they looked at historically is when the iPad 1 came out last year, all of the companies that had announced tablets at CES in January, then the iPad came out in April and blew it away in specs and price. None of the previous companies ever released their pads, so Apple got another year out of the iPad 1. Now the iPad 2 came out this spring, and the existing tablets haven't done very well at all. So Apple doesn't need a newer iPad to compete with the current tablets, because the current iPad is pretty much better than the current tablets. So next year, after the latest round of other companies' tablets comes out, we'll probably see the iPad 3 next spring.
Yeah.
Right. What they have to do is amortize the cost of creating it.
Mm-hmm.
And then every sale after that is gravy, so they're not going to come out with a 3 until they reach a point where the sales are flagging and they need a boost.
There was an interesting comic. It was probably Joy of Tech, where they were talking about Steve Jobs' last days. And it was call Tim Cook, see how he's doing. Check Johnny Ive, see how the iPad 6 is working.
I got to be honest with you. If I knew I was dying of cancer, I'd spend my last days with my family. But I guess that's why I'm not Steve Jobs. But
whatever.
Yeah. But nobody knows.
Yep. Okay.
And what we often say in the retail business is when the 3 comes out, you can buy it and then pass your 2 down to someone else, your spouse or children, or sell it on the used market. In fact, I started seeing commercials for Gazelle, which is an electronics basically recycling company. They will buy your old electronic stuff because you bought the new stuff. So they had a new one.
Not for much.
They had a new one about the iPhone. Everyone is buying the new iPhone 4S, and so your old iPhone 4 is burning a hole in your pocket that you just bought. So.
Well, I want to get it as a write-off for this tax year's taxes, so I guess I'll have to buy this.
There you go.
Yep, buy the 2 and be happy.
That's right. Okay. Thank you.
You make so much money next year, you'll need the tax write-off again when the 3 comes out.
Or the thing of it is wait and see, because right now the ads will start coming out for what's coming up this Christmas season, which you can still get it on your taxes as long as people on the Android tablets. And they might be even a little more powerful than the, than the iPad 2. And you're going to gain the benefits of just as many, if not more, apps.
Okay.
All right.
We'll check. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Joanne. There is always that tendency in us as humans to say, maybe I'll just wait for the next one. Maybe I'll just wait for the next one. But when you don't know when the next one's coming out.
And there's always a better one coming out.
My feeling is jump in now, get what you get, be happy, move up when you can, do what you got to do. I bought the original Droid, and I've had it for 2 years, and I'm really ready to move on. But it's a great phone, and it does everything I need it to do, including, wait for it, make phone calls. So I've been pretty happy with it. Can't argue with that. Our next caller, Roger from Greece, New York. They're just popping out of the woodwork in Greece. How are you, Roger?
I'm just ducky. How are you?
Peachy, thanks. What can we do for you?
I have a computer that just died, so I'm going to be looking for a replacement. What I do with the computer is I do Windows, Word, Excel access on the web. I do webmail and, you know, general surfing of websites. I also load photos from my camera into Kodak EasyShare, and that's pretty much the extent of it, and I really don't anticipate, you know, doing a lot more than that. So I was calling to see what your recommendations were for, you know, sort of minimum requirements for such a machine.
Well, minimum requirements are still pretty high these days.
Has Dave updated his list yet?
I got it. No, you got to get it over to Nick.
Got to get it to me. I had somebody else complaining about that.
Yeah, no, I had it too, and I've got the list done. I just finished up this week, I'll admit, has been very crazy.
Are you saying you had life?
No, once
life happened to you this week?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Besides work. And I mean, you know, we're very busy, which, you know, I have the list.
This on a volunteer basis, so you know, it takes an extra day, it takes an extra
Yeah, and I mean, I have my show on Thursdays
basically,
but anyways, I do have the list ready, and Nick, you will have it by this weekend.
All right.
So basically, you want a dual core, you know, say a core 2 processor.
And like an i5.
Yeah, i5 is faster, i7 is faster yet, but at least a core 2.
Well, tell you what, let me go with my right off the bat, my recommendations. And here's what you're going to see on the upcoming list for a current system. I would recommend like an i5. Like I say, it's not the cheapest, it's not the most expensive, it's the middle road. A 1 gig video card, 8 gig of memory, Windows 7 Professional 64-bit, a 21X DVD burner. You know, onboard sound is fine and everything else. Make sure if you're going to use a lot of USB, have maybe an extra USB card put in. Because, you know, everything is just so much faster. The newer motherboards also now support USB 3. And also, for convenience sakes, have a couple of USB ports on the front.
Okay.
But those basic things right there, as I said, will, you know, give you a machine that will do you now and down the road. And that's basically for you other folks that are out there listening and going to, you know, sent me another email requesting. That's what you're going to see on the updated list. And again, I try, you know, well, what if I want to do that? Then, you know, it's not a basic machine. Once you say, oh, well, I want to do gaming, then we got to talk a whole day. This is basically, and this is going to be my preference around this configuration, is that you're doing just basic internet surfing, mail, say word processing, and the basic stuff. Not video editing, a game machine, or anything else. Those are different machines.
And a lot of times when people say basic web surfing, they end up meaning playing games on Facebook or you know, watching YouTube videos. That's a little higher end thing.
But that's why I say, though, if you go with the 1 gig graphics card.
Yeah, dedicated graphics card is
better.
With
the dedicated graphics card in there, this middle of the road machine will still be able to handle the YouTube and everything else. If you want to start playing third party games where you're playing World of Warcraft and all that other, no.
No, that's way beyond what I would want. Okay, you were moving quickly through there, and I just how much RAM did you suggest?
Minimum of 4, 8 is better.
I'm gonna because the way the memory is right now is here's my recommendations, I'll go very slow. An i5 processor, a 21X DVD burner,
okay,
8 gig of memory.
Okay.
Because memory is cheap right now. Windows 7 Pro 64-bit.
Okay.
A 1 terabyte hard drive. Question thing of it is, though, right now, folks, hard drives have gone through the roof. They have tripled in price. Triple. All right.
Flood in Thailand took out almost every major
90% of hard drives were manufactured in Thailand, which is now underwater.
So you got your DVD burner, the graphics, the 1 gig graphics card, and a case. And I would also, 42-in-1 card reader. That more or less replaces the floppies now that you can plug in a jump drive there, or you can take your card out of your camera and plug that in.
42 and 1
card reader.
Well, it can read 42 different types of memory cards. If you know your camera has an SD card, then you can get just an SD card reader.
Yeah, but you know these are so cheap now, and have it replaced the floppy. You know, because nobody uses floppies anymore.
Right.
And I would advise an additional, depending on how many USB ports are on it, get some more. Because everything nowadays, your tablets, your mice, your keyboard, everything else uses up USB ports,
mm-hmm.
and you run out of them quick. So, okay. You know, you can always have them throw in for $15 an extra USB 2 card.
Okay, very good.
And that would be a basic system. You can go with the onboard sound. Again, this is for a basic system. Onboard sound, onboard networking, and you're good to go.
Okay, well, I thank you very much.
You're quite welcome, sir. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
One thing we've been seeing a lot of people like, and we had a hard time trying to find it, is a desktop PC with built-in Bluetooth, because he didn't want to have dongles for his keyboards and mice. And it's hard to find internal Bluetooth these days. More common in laptops.
Right. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Stay tuned for Uncle Dave's Story Hour and a whole bunch more on your member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at whatever time it is, 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Marianne from Irondequoit on the line. Welcome, Marianne. What's your question?
Hi, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Good, thank you. I have a question. It's actually for another person's computer. What's happening, someone apparently got into their email and is sending out bogus emails, and mine is one of them that it keeps sending it to. They don't know how to prevent somebody from sending it out to other people. I thought possibly changing their password, or is it just too late?
Well, if they change their password and someone was actually in their email, that would stop it. But it's more likely that nobody's in their email.
Right.
What these people do nowadays when they're sending out spam is they not only have a list of a bunch of people they send the spam to, but they randomly pick one of those names to send the spam from.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, when you send mail, you don't have to say your name is Marianne. You can say it's Bill at Soundbites. And so the person at the other end thinks it's coming from Bill at Soundbites.
Exactly, and that's what happens.
Yep, and there's nothing you can do to change that.
Mm-mm. Really?
All you can do
is keep throwing away those emails.
Okay, so that person who it's coming from can't do anything.
No, because they're not doing it.
It's not coming from them.
Right. Now, like I said, she should definitely change his or her password, but that may not solve the problem.
Right, okay. I kind of, that's what my concern was, if someone already had the email and you couldn't do anything about it.
Well, right, because it's not really coming from their email program. They're just somebody else is spoofing, as it's called, spoofing the name.
The other thing, though,
it's like putting the wrong return address on a letter.
Anybody can do that.
Anybody can put anybody's address on a letter in the mail, and it doesn't say where it's actually coming from.
Or the other thing that could have happened, which is very popular, is she could have gotten a rootkit. And one of these other rootkits is they go in there to various people. What these folks do, because the virus writers don't make any money anymore of just writing a virus and, oh, yeah, I crashed your machine, big deal. They've gotten very creative in that they sit there and create these little programs that'll go out there and say, sniff your machine and try to save, and a lot of folks use it, say, Outlook Express.
Mm-hmm.
And they take and steal their email address book.
Mm-hmm.
So they gather these up. So they're sitting back, pulling in literally probably millions of Outlook address books. Mm-hmm. They pull them in, and they compile all those email addresses. Now they turn around, and for a little tidy sum, they can turn to these spammers in their underworld and say, tell you what, I can sell you 250,000 email addresses, say, $25.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get this going out to enough spammers, now they're making money on a little program that they wrote. And they just have to sit back, and now they can collect those up. It pulls them in, and then they can resell all those email addresses, and it makes it look like they came from your friend.
Right. Now,
and there you go. You're hacked.
If you forward any of those to spam, that actually won't help either, right? Because they don't, they're not getting at the root of where it's coming from.
Well,
right.
What they'll do is if you forward them to you know, abuse at your place or spam at whoever your vendor is, that'll help a little bit. But what? But if it's actually coming from your friend's email address, then it just blocks her.
Right. Oh, okay. Right. It shows up that it's coming from another person, that person's email address.
Right.
Yeah. I get junk mail all the time that says it came from me.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
Right. Or the administrator of my website.
Yeah. Which is me.
Right.
That's
right.
Right. Me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it's really easy to fake who a message came from. And so for all the other people that try to email me saying, you're sending out junk email, no, I'm not.
Right.
Stop sending me those messages because it isn't me. And
right. I've recently begun
do.
Getting stuff from service@asknick.com.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's
You better answer that.
I better answer that. It's important. Yeah. But short of your friend changing his or her email address, there's likely nothing that can be done.
I see.
Sorry.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure, Marianne.
And even changing your email address, you have to tell all your friends what your new address is, and that's annoying.
All right, kiddies, you hear that music. It's that time once again. Get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave! Uncle Dave!
I'm coming.
Uncle Dave is coming. The elephants are charging. Here he comes.
Just
in
like
a cloud of dust. Leaping down off the hood on top of the elephant and wending his way, taking off his helmet.
That elephant would have to be swimming to this music.
It would have to be swimming to this music.
No,
right?
The reason I picked this, because it builds up, you know? And just like if you've been sitting around.
It's John Williams, isn't it?
And say,
everything's,
you know,
John Williams.
Go to old Uncle John's, a big fisherman, and he starts out with a little, you know, a fish story. And the fish starts out this big. And then he keeps talking, and then it gets this big.
Yep.
And then this big. So it's like the anticipation. Well, this is sort of like what happened this week with a laptop.
Do tell.
Here we bring in this laptop, and they're all in the panic because, oh, it had just a little spill on it.
Just a little spill.
But they packed it in rice. Well, we'll see what we can do. But, well, how much is this going to cost me?
Because they saw that in Body Proof.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know until we get into it. And he said, well, could you take a quick look at it? We quick look at it, and you go, you sure this is just a little? Well, maybe just, you know, a couple teaspoons. So now the fish is getting a little bit big.
Yeah.
Because it just isn't working, you know. We quick dried, you know, tried to dry it off and all this other stuff. Yeah. But you know what? We're going to have to look at it, you know, and take it apart. Now? No. Not unless you want to pay rush service, because, oh, see all those around there? They want two. Yeah, but I got to have it.
Everybody has to have their computer now. We had three people this week want to pick their computer up before they were done, and then we're mad that they weren't done. Well, wanted to pick it up.
Well, then here it goes. They go, well, yeah, just to let you know, a little heads up. Maybe it was maybe an ounce of water or so, or coffee that got in there. Okay,
I guess it's gone from a minnow to a small
trout. Fell in the pool, right?
So, we said, all right, tell you what, we'll quick pull it apart and take a look at it. Now, all of a sudden, this medium-sized perch, have you?
Yeah.
Turns into a frappin' whale.
Mm-hmm.
We pulled this thing apart. It wasn't a little ounce, a couple drops. It was totally flooded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could have had a cappuccino off the thing.
Yep.
Because it was just flooded.
They didn't even try to tip the water back out of it?
No. They just banked the rice in there. They thought it through osmosis. It was going to draw it up.
Nice. Well, they laid it down on it. I see.
Yeah, it was literally cream with all this. And then I get, so you're going to be able to save it? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. That'll be about $2,000. Yeah. Yeah,
I can save the data. Yeah, but I need the laptop too.
Well, you can take it.
You can take it.
Clearly, it's already a pretty decent boat anchor.
Doorstop. I says, I can take the hard drive out, put it, but I need the laptop. I says, well, you can have it. There's no problem. You can have the laptop. It won't work,
but you can have it.
You can have it.
There's a concept we're trying to get across here, beyond economical repair.
Right. Yes.
Yes, it can be repaired. It needs to new this.
But I was literally laughing.
Needs a new screen, new case, new motherboard, new keyboard.
But here's something that starts out as a few drops.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
To a flood. This thing was literally, I could have drained it, like I say, in a little, probably a cappuccino cup, and had coffee sipping along while I was doing, trying to dry it out.
I had that problem with a machine at work. One of our people brought it in and said, I don't know what happened to it. And I looked at him and said, well, the huge coffee stain across the keys tells me something. He said, I don't know anything about that. I said, okay, how many people use this machine? Just me. Okay. But you don't drink coffee. But this is clearly a coffee stain. And I opened it up and I said, that's clearly pooled coffee in there. I don't know where it came from. The mystic coffee gods dropped a pound of coffee and a ground and brewed pot of coffee into your machine. But I don't know what to tell you now. There's coffee in here.
The other thing, though, is, and I love it. So, after she, I'm the phone with her, she goes, well, why aren't these things waterproof? I says, because they don't intend folks to be drinking over them. They're not meant to.
There are waterproof computers, and they cost a heck of a lot more.
They're just trying to shift the blame to somewhere else. Right. It's still them. But, they're trying to shift it to, well, they should be waterproof. It's like, no.
No, they're...
It was so cool, though. Like I say, that's why I had to do the draws, because it slowly builds up.
That's actually pretty cool.
We had one kind of like that, where they brought the computer in, didn't tell us what was going on. We open it up, and it's filthy and disgusting and smells, and what in the world is that? And, oh, yeah, I got drunk one night and puked on it. A couple of months ago.
Excellent.
They just let it sit and fester in the closet.
All right, on that charming note, kiddies, put your empty hot cocoa mugs in the drainer. Get out of your footy jammies because we're done. We're going to put Uncle Dave on the shelf for another week at least.
And I thank you for all the folks. I did get a number of folks responding back to me. And I hadn't been doing the Uncle Dave story out there for a while. But, slowly getting them back, something I can't do every week because, some weeks, believe it or not, it just is a mundane week. But, I still tap into some of the other stories I've got in there and try to do a better job of bringing them to you for entertainment purposes. And a number of folks said, well, you don't mention names, do you? I go, no, never. I'll never mention a name, just the situation. And if that the shoe fits, wear it.
That's right. It's your shoe. Own it.
That just brought a chuckle to my sides all week long.
I know.
We understand. Everyone who brings their computer in needs it back. Yeah. Everyone has important stuff on it. We know that. But you've got to wait your turn.
Yeah.
And calling every hour isn't going to help.
No.
In fact, it will annoy us and probably make it last longer.
Well, if I wasn't talking to you, I could maybe finish up on this other one so that I could get yours on the bench.
Or they'll stop by again. Oh, I was in the area. I wanted to stop by, see how it was.
Yeah. It's still there. You want to go over and say hello to it?
Well, can I pick it up? Sure. Do you want it fixed? No, it's not ready yet.
Yeah. Oh, we get it the same thing. I love working with the public. Wouldn't turn away any of my customers.
The reality is, if somebody calls and says, can I pick up my computer? The answer is always yes.
Yes.
Of course you can. It won't work, but you can pick it up.
It hasn't been fixed, but you can pick it up anytime you want. Right.
Why is it taking so long? Because it does.
Yeah.
There may be people ahead of you.
The other one is, they call and you say, well, it's on the bench doing diagnostics. Well, how long is that going to take? My crystal ball went out to the shop. It's at the repair center right now, and they haven't given me an idea when that's coming back, so I can't tell you.
Right. Right. Everybody thinks diagnostics are something that are cut and dried.
Yeah, no.
They take as long as they take because in some cases you have to do more or you have to do less or you have to run a different thing. Or it's just,
you
got to
pound
ridiculous.
On them. Sometimes you got to pound on them to get them to fail. That's I've got a server right now back at the shop. We brought it back in the afternoon. We went to do a simple update.
There ain't no such beast.
Well, this we've done hundreds of times. I won't say 100, but a few times for this one client. And they did the update. Now, also, I don't think it's hardware. I think it's Windows 2003 server because it goes to boot and it hangs on loading the server. So I think I'm going to have to reload server. Although I was looking at the motherboard and I got a couple capacitors that are popping. So I'm a little leery. This thing is 5 to 6 years old. I think I'm going to have to tell them. And again, they're going to be in a panic because, it's their server. I mean, the data isn't all that's there. I just got to get a new box for them.
This is one of the problems that I have with accountants. And I know many accountants who are almost human. But let me explain this. When you tell me that there's a five-year return on investment on these things, and I have to amortize them over 5 years, and the industry is telling me this device won't last more than 3 years, I've got a two-year gap problem. And that means that for 2 years, I'm listening to a ticking clock every single day. And, I get that the longer you amortize something, the better and blah, 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 blah. But the reality is that an amortization schedule that worked in the 50s doesn't work in the aughts or in the teens now. So really the reality is that you can't expect that original amortization schedule is going to hold for today. It's just unrealistic. Some places have made the transition. 3 years is exactly what it should be, but a lot have not. And you have to be aware that sometimes the world doesn't bend to the gods of accounting. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and we continue to be the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and you are listening to us on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Let me just take a quick moment to once again thank all those of you who over the past few weeks have been kind enough and generous enough to make a pledge to this station. We appreciate everything you do for us. It's you people who keep the doors open, and we're just ever so grateful for all that you have done for us. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Well, I do I'm a tech, and I do fire alarm work, and have about 50 group homes. In the past, I have done I do my quarterly tests. They're on a form, and I've given the folks, the administrators, the hard copies. Now they want everything sent by email, and I want to know what the smallest type of file I can do for a black and white form, and because I gather there's some limitation as to how many I can send per email.
A PDF?
PDF would be the best size, because I'm getting
PDF is a format. Would you could just send a text file, and text is as small as you're going to get.
Yeah, okay.
Would Word?
You could use Word to create a text file. Yes.
Yeah. Does this need to look like the form? Is that what they want?
Oh yeah. That's the problem. I already have the form, blank form, in PDF format. So what can I do with that? That comes out looking like a pretty large file.
When you create the PDF and whatever program you used, you can tell it to compress the file more and create the file smaller.
Mm-hmm. And it would still be a PDF?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, if you've got this form and it is a PDF, can you fill it out now with something?
Well, I print out the blank forms, fill them out by hand. And again, I would just hand the folks the hard copies.
Yeah.
Now
right.
They want this all to come
well,
by.
Okay, a fillable, outable PDF is a big, much different thing.
Well, thing of it is, though, is he creates a form, say, in OpenOffice. in OpenOffice, you can turn around and save it as a PDF.
Right, yeah, whatever program you're creating that PDF in, when you create the PDF, there are options for different compression levels to make that PDF smaller. How big is the PDF as it is now?
I think it was 1 megabyte or something. Well, see, so I've got this blank form that I use, and I print them out, I do the inspections, and I fill them out by hand. Now I've got a new form that's got information on them. I've got to scan that and do something with it and send it via email, and I got like 50 houses that I got to do that with.
Are there any graphics on the form, or is it all text and lines?
Yeah, it's all text and lines.
Yeah, and then you can save it as a 1-bit black and white JPEG even, and it will be a very small file.
Ooh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you send it as a 300 DPI 32-bit color, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, because he just needs a snapshot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a JPEG, an image, you're saying, just send it filled out as a scan it as a JPEG
at low quality black and white. Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. And is there some limitation generally with these like Gmail and Yahoo Mail as to
It depends, unfortunately, on the email program. They all have a limitation, and they're all different.
Generally, about 5 megabytes is as big as you want to try. Some services will let a little higher, some will let a little smaller, but 5 megs is about as big as you ever want to get.
Okay, so anything above that, I'd have to send multiple emails then to accomplish.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sending one administrator copies for 30 houses. I'm going to have to do a bunch of emails then.
Yep.
Break them up. Okay, thank
you
very much.
Well, in that case, it'd be better to put them on a file server and not send them through email.
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, but email wasn't designed to send files. It was designed to send small pieces of text. So there are ways to share files by using a file server. And there are public file servers you can use on web pages to send a lot of files to someone.
Oh. You can also, if you're using Gmail now, if you use Google Docs, you can share a document with another person.
Okay.
So you get 7 gigs of space for Gmail, for Google Docs, and so you can save all of those PDFs as documents in Google Docs. Share that with the people you need to share it with, individually or collectively. And then when they've got them, they can delete them so the space isn't overused up.
So if they don't have a Gmail address, they've got to log out, you know, they've got to do one. They've got to start.
Well, you can share with people who are not in Gmail, but it's easier if they have Gmail.
Okay.
But it's free.
All right, well, you guys have given me some good ideas.
And especially if this is the way they want you to go, and again, to save space in that, if you're going to do one part, they can Gmail accounts are free, you know, and let them come halfway too.
And one of the things you can do in Gmail is create forms.
Ah, okay. So I didn't know that. I mean,
not do it in Gmail. Sorry, you can do it in Google Docs.
Yeah,
Google Docs. You can do forms, so you could fill them out right on your screen. And then they can view the results or whatever.
Yeah, you probably set up, separate folders if they have different...
Yeah, but the forms end up as spreadsheets, so it's going to look different.
Yeah.
It's going to look different. So, but you can still save the documents as PDFs, throw them into Google Docs, and then the share them with the people you need to share them with. And when they've downloaded them, they can or you can delete them.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea, too. All right, that's great. You guys have given me some great ideas. I appreciate that.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. That's one of the interesting things is that there are so many choices nowadays.
Yeah, nowadays.
I do a lot of forms in Gmail, in Google Docs for various things nowadays, but that you create a form, it looks beautiful, you fill it out online, it looks beautiful, but the result you get is actually a spreadsheet, which is actually exactly what I want.
Okay.
You know, but that's what you get as a result, and so you wouldn't see the forms filled out as such. You only see the spreadsheets.
I say, even with Steve's idea of saving it as, you know, a JPEG, one K JPEG,
yeah, a lot of times when you scan something, your scanner will save it at, you know, say 300 DPI and 32-bit color. And you can change that. If all you're scanning is text, you can change that to 8-bit or even 1-bit, and you get a much smaller file.
Well, the thing about it is, here's, and I know he's still listening, here's another suggestion. I mean, if he's, you know, if you save that as a 1K file, and he's saying, well, he's sending it out to all these different folks. Well, you know, granted, it only sounded like maybe 50 people. So if you turn around and break it down into 5 groups of 10 and, you know, email it to each group, you're not going to get accused of spamming.
If you're sending one file to 50 people, that's not really an issue. Right. If you're sending 50 files to one person, that becomes the problem
size. Right. It's the internet was – the email was originally designed for small text files. And so
– 7-bit text.
7-bit text. And so having high-end graphics programs, most email programs don't accept huge files simply because the people who are running those servers don't have that much free space on them.
Works on cuts.
Yeah, it does.
Hand sanitizer.
Yeah, hand sanitizer on cuts.
I got a paper 90% cut the alcohol, other day. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a paper cut the other day and did the hand sanitizer thing and thought it was going to go through the roof.
I didn't. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love Google Docs. I use it for so much stuff nowadays. But
I use the calendaring and the email, which is phenomenal. I mean, it's great that I can, you know, get the emails on my phone. Yeah. And like I say, the calendar. Oh, thank you enough for the calendar because it just has saved my butt more times than not, you know, because literally I put all the appointments on it. But the key thing is birthdays. So for my two daughters and my mm-hmm. 6 grandchildren and my other friends and that, you know, it sends me a reminder because I do suffer from CRS and as all of us over 50 do. And, you know, it's a great tool. I just get a little chime. It goes off. And a quick check.
A friend of mine came to market one day and had a hat that said Kraft on the front. I said, what is that for? He says, can't remember a thing.
Oh, I like that one too. That's right up there with my picnic.
Yep. So yeah, but if you haven't looked at Google Docs, there's a lot of nifty things. Now again, it's who do you trust? Google has your data. Are they actually interested in your letter to Aunt Fanny? I don't think so. But you know, it's who do you trust? So the reality is, most of us don't have stuff important enough that Google is going to care. But the reality is, you have to decide who you trust and how you feel that's going to work. But I'll tell you what, I do love Google Docs, and I use it for so many things, sharing documents with people. Multi-editors, that I love that. I have sat with people across the country, and we have simultaneously edited documents. We're talking on Google Talk through video chatting and editing a document on Google Docs, and it's an amazing experience. I'm just very, very impressed by the ability to do that. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. If you haven't tried Google Docs or Google Talk, give it a shot. It's pretty interesting stuff. All right, that music tells me that that you've now wasted 2 hours of your life. There's 2 hours of your life you're not going to get back. Thank you so much for listening. And once again, let me reiterate how grateful we all are here. That you folks took the time and were generous enough to reach into your pockets and donate to this latest pledge drive. It keeps these doors open. It keeps these lights on. It keeps us here every Saturday. And we couldn't possibly be more grateful. So thank you so very much.
Me on Thursday.
And keep Dave here on Thursday nights. George is in next with German music. It's rousing and gets the blood stirring. So listen, we'll be back next week. Thanks to your generosity and the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and member-supported Jazz 90.1.